Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, front and center this hour. Big moves from the investment committee today, which is also debating the state of the rally. Joining me for the hour, right here, Post 9, Josh Brown, Kerry Firestone, Bill Baruch, and Liz Young. Let's check the markets. We're green across the board today. Do have a nice rebound. Rates are down. Oil's holding steady. Dollar's a bit weaker. And all of that is playing into this story. We do want to begin, though, with some significant moves from Kerry today, which we're going to show you on our wall, at least the beginning of, because you've trimmed a number of stocks, big name stocks, many of which have done quite well. And that's probably leads into why you're trimming them. But let's show the wall as we track your trades. You've trimmed Home Depot, Amex, Blackstone, Booz, and Sherwin-Williams. Tell me why.
Well, you hit it, Scott. There's been a rally, huge rally. We're up 28% since the middle of October, and these stocks have participated dramatically. Some of them on the basis of interest rates perhaps coming down. Now we may not have that rate cut as quickly as we expected, and so why not take some profit? So I think, by and large, we're talking about housing-related stocks, defense, banking, I mean, finance, Amex all-time high, and so we trimmed them.
Okay, so are you, I almost feel like you're also suggesting that stocks that went up a lot on rate cut hopes might be in jeopardy of losing some of those gains if we're not going to get the kind of cuts we thought we were, and you'd like to get some off the table before the pullback happens.
Well, either a pullback or they underperform. They could be flat and just underperform. There are other opportunities. And so we're going to transpose money from here to other places that we think we have more upside.
You sold completely out of O'Reilly.
We did.
Why?
Well, I feel terrible about this, Mr. O'Reilly. It's been such a good stock. We've owned this for years, and we may own it again. But if you look at the chart of O'Reilly Auto, it's a fabulous chart, and now it's an expensive stock on a multiple basis, undervalued. However you look at it, same store sales, and you think about why the parts and auto repair business has been so strong. In a way, because people were not able to get new cars. Now they are. They weren't trading into used cars that were newer than theirs. Now they are. So we think that this might be a time to take money off the table.
Okay. It's not all about selling or taking money off the table. You are deploying capital into Booking, into CarMax, and Health Equity.
Yes. And those stocks, we think, have more upside. They trade for below market multiples. People are traveling. We talked about that yesterday. We also think that, you know, if we consider what's going on just in the world of cars and being able to find used cars at reasonable prices, that's better. And so, you know, we're making these choices based on where opportunities are.
Do you think, Josh, we're vulnerable in the sense of what has in part at least driven Kerry to trim the names that she has? Many, many stocks in this more broad market over the last month at least have gone up a lot on the prospect that we're going to get these rate cuts that we think we're going to get. Well, you know, whether it's Powell yesterday or Bostic or whomever, and you're going to get some more Fed speak, a lot of it today. And I think we're going to have some headlines coming up as some of those speakers make their remarks, that the market's gotten a little, and a lot of these stocks have gotten a little ahead of themselves on what will turn out to be false hopes.
So we're in this moment right now, and we've been in this moment for a little while, where we're back to higher interest rates on, let's say, the 2-year, the 10-year, negative for a certain type of stock, big stocks, important stocks. But then when those rate fears ease for the day, it's like a green light to go out and buy them. It's very reminiscent, Judge, and you'll probably remember this, of the risk on, risk off stuff from 2011, 2012, when on a Monday it would look like Europe is Armageddon, and then the next day European currencies would rally, and there would be this like whole group of stocks you could just blindfold yourself and buy any of them. We're doing that now with interest rates, and it's fun, it's interesting. Eventually, everyone learns the game and it stops working. But look at today. You get this. You get the rate fears cool off a little bit. What are your top three leadership groups? Surprise, surprise. Real estate number one, up 1% on the day. Consumer discretionary number two, up almost 1%. Number three is industrials, number four is tech. It's like surprise, surprise. So today
Russell.
I want to do. I want to coin the term. We're going to call it cut on, cut off. Today is a cut on day, right? You got a little bit of easing in rates. People are a little bit more sanguine about, you know, what's happening with the inflation story, and they'll let these stocks run. If you get something that seems to be negative on the inflation front, or tomorrow's jobs report is a blowout number, or average hourly earnings are way ahead of schedule, you're going to see it be a cut-off market. And you're going to see industrials down big. They'll crush the real estate names. They'll hit consumer discretion. So this is the new game. I hope you all learn it. I hope we can have this game for, I don't know, as many weeks as we have until June, July, and then eventually it'll end. But that's what's happening right now. And you could track it yourself on your screen.
So if it's that binary,
cut
right,
on today.
As you suggest, right, rates up and, you know, cut off, rates down.
Yeah.
Cut on. So, Liz, do you feel like we are vulnerable? Whether it's Kerry expressing it through selling or trimming some names that have gone up a lot on these hopes. You know, Josh laid it out pretty well. The market is obviously super sensitive at this moment about higher interest rates because it's traded a little uneasy as rates have backed up. Well, they're back off and here we are green again.
Yep. And if you look at something like the MOVE index, which is the volatility in yields, that's gone up quite a bit this week. And even though we have a little bit of a back off in yields today, we're still up 15 basis points in the 10-year this week. That is a huge move in Treasury yields. So far, it's been a short-term change in trend, meaning yields up, stocks down. That's the change in trend. The year-to-date period saw yields up, stocks up. So I don't think it's definitive yet that that's what's occurring, but I do think that the market is going to run out of patience for this waiting period. We somehow digested going from 6 cuts to 3 cuts very easily, and at some point we continue to keep pushing these back. I think really the bigger risk, what we are at risk for, is a reheating and a reacceleration in inflation that extends beyond the February numbers, because those were explained away by seasonality. If we get hotter inflation for March, we get hotter inflation for April, I think you're going to start to hear conversations about actually hikes coming back into play, and that will make people very
nervous. That would be super cut off.
That way, way cut off.
Look, you've just talked about, it was weeks and weeks ago, about the biggest risk you see is the possibility that we do have reigniting inflation,
that is
more sticky than people think, and then the Fed's got to either act on that or just keep rates much higher for much longer than even people suggest.
That is the risk, and I think if you listen to what the Fed had to say the last time they had the presser, they were basically like, look, a strong labor market alone in and of itself is not going to interfere with us doing what we think we need to do on the interest rate side. I don't think the market believes them, quite frankly. So I would be looking to tomorrow, and don't worry about headline. So we're looking for 216,000 jobs. Don't worry so much about that, because if that's at 300,000, no one's going to fall out of a window. Look at average hourly earnings. Look at hours work. Like, look at the stuff that's really going to filter into PCE in the near term. That's the stuff where the market really might not like it, to Liz's point. She's exactly right. And I remain of the thinking, earnings are not the risk. It just isn't. International stuff is not the risk. This is the risk that the Fed says, you know what? One more wouldn't kill anyone. And we're back to talking about when is the next 25 basis point hike. I don't think we're there yet. I just think if you want to worry about something, that's the thing you should worry about.
So how should we view the markets here?
Well, as Josh has said, it's tomorrow is big for near-term trading. But one thing I like what I've seen within the CME Group's Fed Watch tool is you have a 55 to 60% probability of 3 cuts this year. So it's not like it's really fully priced in. So the market is being prepared for some hotter data. Now, in the last couple of days, again, to your point, and the cut on as jobless claims a little higher than expected, services data a little lower than expected. But with all of this happening, CPI and PPI have started to nudge up a bit. And I look at three being a trend. We've only had two. So I think the next couple of weeks here are going to be absolutely crucial for this market.
No, but the market is definitely, you know, in some respects, and it's not showing up all that well, and a couple of pullback days in the big picture don't mean anything. But the market's tying itself in a knot a little bit about the idea, well, what if the Fed actually does nothing? What if they don't cut even once? What if they just cut once? But what if it's not until the fourth quarter, like Bostic suggested? Now, Steve Cohen was on the network yesterday and said, well, market's pricing in three. I'm not going to argue with that. I had the hedge fund manager David Einhorn of Greenlight on yesterday from Sohn, where he said maybe the market's ahead of itself as well. Let's listen. How many times are they going to cut this year?
I think fewer than are priced in right now.
So fewer than three?
Sure.
You think they cut? You think there's a chance they don't do anything?
There's a chance. I think inflation is reaccelerating. I think there's a lot of indication of that.
What do you want to make of that?
As we have been saying, it is going to be, you know, live and die by the data. So right now, where we live and die by what we have is non-farm payroll and then the CPI coming down the pipeline. But I also want to put the focus on that the market has reacted simply to Fed Chair Powell not denying that we're going to cut. And so overall, I think the market has relief of that. And let's not forget, we are in an election year this year. And I think that The Federal Reserve watches the stock market a lot less than people think, and they're a bit more political than people think.
Let me also remind you that, you know, you've got seven Fed speakers, seven.
That's helpful.
Throughout the day, including Richmond's Barkin, who is a voter and who speaks in less than 5 minutes. And we're going to have the headlines from our Steve Leisman once we know exactly what Tom Barkin is saying. And that plays into our conversation. Carrie, I guess the next step is, things have moved in this market, or investors are starting to buy things in this market on the expectation that rates were going to start coming down, like small and mid caps, for example. Right. JP Morgan's retail flows, okay, not institutional flows like the flow show that we look at from other firms. Big retail buying, uptick in small and mid cap. Are we getting off sides there, as Wolf suggests? Are we subscribing to the notion that small caps are officially breaking out? Not quite yet, they say.
Yeah, I would say not quite yet. And those retail flows can move around a lot. You can have a couple of very big days on the downside, and that would wipe out that retail buying. I would just like to point out that on the question about inflation and what happens with cuts or not cuts, someone like Einhorn has been a gold bug for years. And he has bought gold in the past, I think, big sizes of gold. He believes in gold. I don't think that because he's buying gold, we should therefore assume that he, you know, that this is something brand new for him, that inflation he believes is going to be
higher
than
expected. No, but he is far from the only one.
Oh, I understand
that. He's not an outlier. There are a lot of people who actually have come on the network, big names, and suggested, well, inflation is going to be stickier, or I wouldn't be surprised if we get no cuts, like James Gorman had to say. But hold your thought, because on this note, we do have these headlines now from the Richmond Fed president, Tom Barkin. Let's get right to Steve Leisman, who has those for us. Steve.
Yeah, and really adding to the conversation you guys have been having, Barkin saying it's smart for the Fed to take our time before beginning the process. Remember that word, the process of toggling rates down. So he's a guy who thinks they ought to do cut rates, but not necessarily right away. He's optimistic that keeping rates somewhat restrictive can bring inflation back towards the target. A couple bullet points here. He's looking for inflation to decline, and he wants it to be sustained, and he wants it to broaden to more goods. We've heard that from a bunch of Fed folks recently, the idea of broadening the inflation decline. The full impact of higher rates, he believes, is yet to come, especially showing up in balance sheets of corporations and higher interest payments. The economy, he believes, is less vulnerable to a slowdown because companies have spent a lot of time preparing for one that didn't happen. A couple other points. He says the risk of continued shelter and service inflation is something he's watching carefully because goods prices, which have been negative, have started to normalize and be more towards the zero line. He believes the Fed has the firepower to respond to a slowing economy and knows how to react to the overheating economy because Josh and I like the same music, think about the markets the same way. I actually prepared a cheat sheet for just what Josh was talking about. We know, for example, 17 of 19 officials have forecast at least one cut this year, with the median at three. But here's what everybody is pretty much saying along the same lines, Scott. Cuts are forecast, not promised. They're using phrases like, it'll be likely appropriate sometime this year to cut. They're absolutely data dependent, using phrases like if the economy evolves as expected, and they are in no rush to cut, saying policy is well positioned now to go either way, and we have time. I'll leave it right there, but that's really what you just heard Barkin use that phrase, essentially, we have time. That's where everybody is in the whatever Josh was calling it, the cut, no cut regime that we're living under right now.
So these remarks sound more cut off than they sound cut on. So nobody's saying no cuts, but this is another like, hey, it's not June. Just to me,
Josh, can you nuance your phraseology? I know it sounds really good the way you said it, but it's not quite cut off. It's cut delay or cut later, or everybody's still in the cut
camp. Same thing, Steve. We're talking about June. So it's cut on or cut off for June.
Okay, so that explains the volatility that we've seen, by the way, over time. All of this is being expressed, guys, in the June probabilities. I've had it as low as 53%. It's now, I don't know what, after Barkin, but it had been about 62, 63% this morning. That is essentially where the doubt and the concern and then the confidence in the cuts is being expressed in June.
You want to just remind us real quick as we wait for Goolsbee in 30 minutes time, the Chicago Fed president, non-voter, by the way, who is going to have his own remarks, what we could expect from him later on in this same hour?
You know, Scott, I keep waiting for somebody to step out of the fold and say something dramatic. I am not hearing it. I am, I guess, impressed and maybe a little bit confounded by how everybody has been in the same camp here. You notice that those three tiles I put up, almost everybody expresses some version of those three things. What's a dove these days? Maybe one who's a little more confident than the other person that inflation will eventually come down. What was a dove before? Somebody who says, you know what? We got to cut rates right now because we're going to have a big problem if we don't. There's almost nobody in that camp, Scott. And it's not Democrats or Republicans. It's not Trump appointees or Biden appointees to the Fed. They all seem to be pretty much in the same place. What the other thing we don't hear, Scott, is this notion of, you know, we have to change the metric or the target. You know, Bostic, I don't know when he became as hawkish as he is, but he's probably the most vocal hawk on the committee right now. I think others have similar ideas. But remember, yesterday we talked to him, one cut, fourth quarter. So chill with your cut on, cut off, Josh, until, I don't know, Halloween now.
You know, one of the issues, too, Steve, is that throughout history, the Fed isn't exactly preemptive or proactive. They're reactive. So even those who may suggest, well, we don't want to eventually have a problem if we leave rates too high for too long, they never seem to actually see the problem until the problem is here, and then they're forced to react.
And then they get it wrong. Look, Scott, one of the amusing things about reading the Fed these days is how surprised they seem to be that they're getting it right. If you read Barkin today, he's like, look, we know this always ends badly. He actually says that in the speech. He goes, I was just looking at the frequency of higher inflation, Fed hikes rates, and then, you know, it comes down and you have this spike in unemployment and recession. It happens every time. It has not happened this time. It has not happened thus far. The Fed does not have a wonderful record of being able to thread that needle between bringing down inflation and not causing a recession. They're surprised they're getting it right. I think the market is surprised they've gotten it right. If you look at what all the forecasts were last year for the recession that never happened. And again, Scott, what's fascinating, and I love Josh's focus on earnings and the economy, which I think Karen was also echoing here, this idea that, look, we haven't gotten the weakness in the first quarter we thought we were going to get. What have we done with first quarter GDP? We've ratcheted up towards 2.8% now.
Yeah, good points, of course. Raise your hand for Goolsbee later this hour. Let us know what he says, and we'll see how the markets react. I mean, rates
sure
ticked up maybe a touch off of Barkin. Stocks hanging in. Dow's still good for 200. S&P's good for 40-plus. So we'll see. Let's move and talk about tech, okay? Because it all plays into this conversation towards Josh's idea. Rates come down, tech goes up. NASDAQ's leading right now, good for 1%. Or so. The idea, too, of whether, you know, this market as a whole is in a bubble in some respects because of the conversation around rates and whether some stocks have bubble-like qualities, even though the whole market may not be. I mean, Steve Cohen was on yesterday, as I said we're not in a bubble. David Einhorn, I asked him the same question. Here's what he said.
I don't particularly think we're in a bubble. We covered our bubble basket stocks in the first quarter of last year. And right now, all of our shorts are idiosyncratic ideas based on situations with the particular companies that are involved.
I mean, Liz, you know, the bears out there love to point out, look at these stock moves, NVIDIA's up so much, and a lot of these chip names have gone crazy. It's got to be a bubble, right? That's what you still hear from the bears. What do you make of what both Cohen and Einhorn had to say? It's not a bubble.
I don't think it's a broad bubble. I think there was a bubble and maybe still is in the enthusiasm around AI in the sense of expecting it to come to fruition this year or sometime in the next 12 months. I still think it's a theme that will continue to play out. And any new theme, any new innovation goes through a boom and bust cycle. We haven't really had a bust cycle in this particular theme yet. So are we in a bubble if we're comparing that to late 90s, early 2000s? No, we're still pretty reasonably priced by comparison that way. We're also reasonably priced by comparison of actual tangible revenues that are occurring in a lot of these companies that have been driven up. However, are we at a late cycle enthusiasm phase that could get drawn out, bring things even higher? And when you look at PEs broadly on the index, whether you look at trailing or forward, and depending on how you look at it, you're somewhere in that 80th to 90th percentile range as far as PEs go. So it's hard to argue that we're cheap. We are overextended by most historical standards. A bubble, though, I would consider much higher than this by broad standards.
I brought out tech purposely because before we go, I wanted to highlight another move. Bill Baruch, you bought a new position this morning in Meta.
I did.
Talk to me.
Well, I've held back on this name. I mean, we've really full force into a lot of the AI with the NVIDIAs and whatnot, but recently, trimming some of these other names, trimming NVIDIA and trimming AMD and trimming Apple, I don't want to ignore the potential of what's still taking place within AI, but as well as a better run company, I think Meta is starting to show us what they've done with CapEx. But my big problem was CapEx for a while and the fear that we're going to start to see this really a lot of spend. Mizzou put a note out talking about maybe being more of a dial with lowering some of the operating costs. So I think that's something that kind of got me looking at it. But their partnership with Amazon on e-commerce, the reels with some risk to TikTok right now, and monetization of that could really bring free cash flow to even a higher level than we're already talking about. Free cash flow doubled over the last year, and then it's expected to go from 40 to 49 billion from 44 billion. And then if you consider that, if they monetize some of these things better, we could see free cash flow beat. This stock is breaking out, and I want to be able to move on from, not move away from NVIDIA, but move on from NVIDIA and get a little more exposure in the space, but just in a different way.
Carrie, quick comment on that before we bounce.
I think it's great that you bought Meta. I think that the upside right now, it seems to be the momentum is carrying it. The quarter should be good. And
you've been trimming, though, right?
We trimmed it because it was so big. It became our largest position, and it's approaching that again.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. Yeah. All right, up next, we're going to talk about the four energy names that Josh Brown says look, quote, exceptional right now. We're going to drill down on that. We do have some more commodity trades to talk about. Bill has trimmed a name. Einhorn's talking gold. We're back after this.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
All right, we're back. Crude, taking a bit of a break today. It has been on quite the run. And you, Josh Brown, have your mind on energy, and you're looking at some stocks specifically that you think are looking pretty interesting these days.
I do. Thanks, Scott. Last week, as my final trade on Thursday, I wanted to highlight IEO, which is the Explorers and Producers ETF. It tends to own the more high beta energy names. Everything I'm about to tell you also applies to the larger names. The entire group is going higher, in my opinion. I think this could be a leadership group when we look back in December, just based on the strength that I'm seeing here. And I want to take you to trade school for 2 seconds. You'll hear this term tossed around a lot on this network and others, overbought. And a lot of people don't even understand that there's a statistical definition to overbought. And what they further don't understand is overbought is not necessarily negative. So the connotation when someone says, oh, that stock's up too much, it's overbought. Ask yourself the second question, though. Why is it overbought? Is there maybe a fundamental reason why everyone is accumulating this stock? There might be. Maybe it's overbought because the stock is going to keep going and go higher. So you have overbought names in the energy patch right now. And I submit to you, that's not a reason not to be in them. Maybe you don't buy them right this second. But here's what I want you to consider. You have the average RSI, that's relative strength, at about 78 in the XLE, which is the energy ETF, the largest cap names. This is the highest reading of all time for the RSI in the XLE. We have data going back to 2004. So in 2 decades, we haven't seen this much buying pressure in these names. And I'm telling you right now, to me, that doesn't feel like the top. That feels like a reintroduction to this space for people who haven't looked at it in a couple of years. Now, you look at crude at 85, the highest level since October. It's up 17% year to date. Then you think about how underweight most managers are to the E&P names, and you get excited. So here are some charts that look exceptional. Carrie, I'm going to come to you in a minute. ConocoPhillips, this is the largest component in the IEO ETF that I just mentioned. It's about 18% of the weighting. This thing is on fire. Marathon, MPC. Take a look at Diamondback, FANG, cute name. The other one is Phillips 66, which is, of course, a refiner. These stocks are all overbought. That's short term. In the longer term, there's a reason this much money is piling into these stocks. And I urge you, if they're not on your ticker, put them on your ticker, keep an eye on them, because I think there are some really exciting things developing.
Bill Baruch, okay. I mean, so you've got Marathon, you've got 66, you have Exxon, but what about Josh's thought here?
I agree totally with him, and that's why we've leaned into the refiners.
That's why I love you.
They're not, yeah. That's why that 4 to 5 years it takes to build more refining capacity. And so right now we are constrained. And in this market right now, you have crude oil elevating a bit. You have moonshots, really, with Marathon Petroleum, FANG, Phillips 66 setting record highs. I'm going to continue to lean into them. And as Josh's point as well, things can stay overbought. And if you look at Marathon over the last year, it just consolidates for a little bit and then goes back up again. So I really love the space. And crude oil is in backwardation, which is very tight supply and high demand right now.
Carrie, Liz, do you guys also want to agree with me? Who wants to agree with me first?
I do agree on energy. I do.
All right.
I mean, look, there's a lot of different reasons to own it right now, especially if you're worried about a reacceleration in inflation, which I am. I think energy has been a driver of that. The correlation between oil prices and real yields is very, very tight. I think that continues to go up. Plus, you've got energy stocks that are paying a decent dividend, and people want dividends right now if they're worried about rates coming back down. So it almost works for both of those schools.
I would say that another way to play energy right now is natural gas, which has done nothing but go down. And if crude continues to go higher, natural gas will eventually. CNX is a stock that we think is very interesting, and it's a different cap name, different cap space, but I think you can do both.
I would kind of disagree with that. I've been saying this for a month now or so. Natural gas has fallen out of bed pretty hard. You do not see markets like this stop going down until there's a big capitulation. As a futures trader, I am staying very far away from natural gas at the moment. So I would be very cautious.
What about, we can look also, the Diamondback again. It's Marathon, it's 66, it's Conoco. So, you know, specific in some respects to refiners. There are others, by the way, who love this trade. It was the best in March.
Yep.
And your overall suggestion is that it could keep going.
The four names that I just mentioned, here's what's fascinating. Yes, the stocks are up a lot, but you're not overpaying necessarily for these names. The median trailing 12-month PE ratio for those four is 11 times. The median price to free cash flow is 13. You've got 7% expected earnings per share growth over the next year. So these are not like horrifically overpriced, monstrous semiconductor stocks. That's not what's going on here. These are under-owned, underrated names that people haven't paid attention to really until the last month or so. So I think that's really important. The second thing I would say, and this is a market-wide thing that I want you to understand, we keep a list of the best stocks in the market. And some of the things that we're using for inclusion, we're looking at relative strength. We're also, of course, looking for profitable companies. We're looking for companies that are within spitting distance of new 52-week highs. The most stocks in my list right now, if you look at the 11 sectors, are coming from the energy space. I got 13 of them from energy out of a list of 68. So there's something happening here that people should just keep in mind. Now, when do you buy them? Well, here's the thing with overbought stocks. RSI's at 78, probably not like the all-time greatest entry. So you're looking for low volume pullbacks in these names to start a position. In my experience, you will get them. On a day like today and yesterday, it feels like, oh, it's never gonna pull back. It left without me. I get it. I understand that feeling. I have been through that before. You'll get it. Wait for those low volume pullbacks. Wait for the downgrades on valuation or whatever nonsense. That's when you want to get excited.
All right.
Wait till the upgrade on valuation. Many of these banks, like a Morningstar, they're marking these companies, these oil stocks, to $60 and $70 oil. Imagine if we have oil above 80 for a longer period of time. They're going to raise that, which means higher cash flow.
Let's talk about another commodity play that's done really, really well in a really short period of time. It's Southern Copper is up 36% in a month. You took some money off the table as a result of that move?
I took a little off the table, yes. We started this position in December. We added to it in January on the show, added to it again a few weeks ago on the end of February, early March. Just taking a little off the table. Our average price is in the 70s. We're up 50% on this thing. I still think that we are in a commodity super cycle or the start of it. And I think that Southern Copper is one of the best run mining companies in the business. Tremendous free cash flow turning good positive ways. Just position management here, simply.
Yeah. And then, well, Liz, you can comment on this. Copper was one of your picks, right, as a contrarian pick?
So it was January 18th, give or take a day. Bill and I were on together. We had to do a contrarian pick. I used an ETF. The ticker is DBB, which is a base metals fund. Most of it is actually copper. About 35% of it is copper. 30-ish percent is aluminum. And it was, I did talk about lumber during that conversation too, but it was more so the idea of inflation reigniting, the materials and commodities complex feeling that reignition and getting into it after it had pulled back and at a time when everybody thought inflation was falling, it would go down in a straight line and all of these commodities would continue going with it. And we ended up being right on that contrarian play.
Bill, you want to comment quickly too about what Einhorn told me yesterday about gold owning more than just the GLD, physical bars as well. He's talking about monetary and fiscal policy clearly as the reason why people continue to accumulate and why the price of gold just goes up every day, of course, but today, but it's been on a run too.
Yeah, I am an eternal gold bull. I am a little biased. I run a metals fund as well. But here's the thing is gold is making new record highs right now. Silver starting to break out potentially, needs to get above $30. Copper is starting to really move. Platinum and palladium are starting to wake up. Aluminum is moonshotting right now. The metals are really waking up. So I think the interesting thing with gold or last couple of days is continue to set record highs as treasury yields are going higher. This is very rare. There's something here, because if yields are going higher, that means treasury prices are going lower. One thing I think potentially is look at the BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China. Are they buying gold? Are they selling treasuries and buying gold? We do know that China is defending the Chinese yuan by selling dollar and buying the yuan. I think there could be something bigger taking place right now. Mm-hmm. I have a target, maybe gold getting up to $2,800. Wow. Not overnight, but $2,800. We would have to see silver get above 30 in order to fuel that, though. But I think this could be just getting started. But don't chase it. I mean, you got to be smart about this.
Okay, good stuff. You guys crushed that. I appreciate that. All right, let's get the headlines now with Bertha Kunz. Hi, Bertha.
Hi, Scott. The EPA awarded $20 billion in grants today for clean energy projects in low-income communities across the U.S. The money comes from the Inflation Reduction Act and will be given to 8 organizations that will undertake thousands of projects that range from energy-efficient home improvements to large-scale projects such as electric vehicle charging stations. Weather forecasters are predicting an extremely active 2024 Atlantic hurricane season. Forecasters at Colorado State University are predicting 23 named storms this summer, 11 hurricanes, and 5 major hurricanes for the season. A typical year averages about 14 tropical storms, with 7 becoming hurricanes. And Major League Baseball is headed to Sacramento. The Oakland A's reached an agreement to play there until 2027, while the team's new Vegas stadium is being built on the site of the recently closed Tropicana Hotel. The A's will make their move to Sutter Health Park once their lease in Oakland ends after this season. First, it was the Raiders that moved back and forth, then moved to Vegas. Now it's the A's.
Yeah. Fan base not happy at all. Bertha, thank you so much. Bertha Kunz. Coming up, a media double play. Paramount pressured on some deal chatter, and Disney delivers a big win. Committee member Jim Labenthal, he owns both. He joins us next.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close? Or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, welcome back. Shares of Paramount down sharply today on reports it's in deal talks with Skydance. You see that stock down more than 9%. Did take a little bit of a leg lower as our David Faber was on the air today reporting from his sources that there would have to be an equity raise as part of a potential deal. So you see what's happened there. Jim Labenthal, we said he owns the stock. He owns Disney, too. We're going to get him on that. But we wanted to get your take, Jim, because I think we morphed from I'm optimistic about the long-term streaming prospects of this company to I'm along for a deal ride. Well, yeah. Now you've gotten some legit talk of a deal and the stock's down 9%. So what say you now?
Yeah, well, so the equity raise that you just referenced with David Faber kind of catches me by surprise. And the reason is actually the company's been operating well. So the last 2 quarters, they've had $800 million of free cash flow against the market cap of $8 billion. That's not bad, and they probably should have another free cash flow positive quarter this quarter on the back of the NCAA tournament and the Super Bowl. But, you know, the hanging question here is, why is the stock down? And put it another way, why does everybody hate this stock? And I think there's 2 answers for that. One is there's a significant fear that Sherry Redstone, as the controlling shareholder, will do something that favors the A shares over the B shares. I don't think that's likely. One reason is that Bob Bakish, the CEO, addressed this on the last conference call. I was on that call. I heard him clearly say that any deal is going to benefit all shareholders. And he said that unsolicitedly. So I think he knows what's out there being rumored.
Yeah.
They will have some legal ramifications if they try to favor the A shareholders over the B shareholders. But still, that's out there.
Yeah,
the
but I mean, when you say, hang on, I'm sorry. When you say, okay. why is the stock down? I mean, to me, it's quite obvious. It's the market's perception that this is a deal of desperation, number one. And then it goes down more, obviously, because an equity raise is dilutive. I mean, it is what it is. This is a position of weakness, not strength.
Well, maybe I'm wrong about the equity raise, but that's the first I've heard about that. They don't have any debt maturities for the next 3 years. They got plenty of cash on hand, so I don't know why they would do the equity raise, but maybe David knows something I don't. Look, the reason that I led with the two positive free cash flow quarters and $800 million at that is that I don't think this company is anywhere near as weak as everybody wants to say. And I think more to the point that there is another deal that's out there. Now, it's a rumor, it's not confirmed, but Apollo apparently has offered $26 billion for the whole shooting match. That's an enterprise value deal that would value the stock in the low 20s. So, you know, I've got to answer the question. We all have to answer the question. Why, if Apollo would buy the stock in the low 20s, is the stock at $12 and change? One answer is the Sherry Redstone answer, controlling stake that I talked about. The other answer is that nobody in the analyst community trusts management. They don't trust management because a year ago they cut the dividend, and yet here we are. We've had two positive free cash flow quarters in a row, and probably another one this quarter, which has the analyst community asking, why the heck did you cut the dividend? So this is definitely a situation where people aren't going to believe anything until there's a deal on the table. But I, you know, again, with the Apollo deal out there, I think this is a low 20s takeout.
You want to give me a quickie on, now that we have a definitive win for Disney in the proxy battle with Peltz, which, you know, Iger talked about on the network today and said now it's, you know, the board is solely focused. Number one priority is going to be succession. How you're thinking about that from here forward as a shareholder?
Yeah, so the succession issue is a 2026 issue. Obviously, they'll be working on it this year and next. For me, and this is what I said yesterday, now it's a time to execute, particularly on streaming profitability, but also on the Hulu deal and whatever they're going to do with ESPN. I mean, it was intriguing that the stock went down yesterday when the results were announced. I honestly think it would have gone down on whatever the results had been. The fact that it's up today indicates that people are focusing now on the operation and execution of the business plan, which is where shareholders' minds are.
Jimmy, you've been with us every step of the way on this battle, so I wanted to hear from you now that we have a conclusion. Jim Labenthal, we'll see you back here coming up next. Our call of the day. It's UBS saying one big bank stock is headed for a rate trap. Bill Baruch is in it. Uh-oh. The debate is next. We're back. Call of the day. It is Bank of America. It was downgraded today at UBS. Stock doesn't care, obviously. They say the stock's headed for a, quote, rate trap. They do raise the price target to 40 from 39. Bill Baruch, you own the stock, which is why I want your assessment of this call and this stock.
37.5 is a sticky area, technically, for Bank of America. I can kind of see where some of this is lining up with it. But they're talking about the rate curve. Actually, if rates start coming down less than expected, or Fed cuts less than expected, Bank of America will make less income. I look at more of the Fed. One of their goals would be to steepen the rate curve. And I think that case is, I think it's a rising tide will lift all boats. And I think there's expectations from the banks are going to rally if the curve starts to steepen a bit. I think that I find that to be a positive. And sentiment-wise, I mean, sentiment has been pretty negative around Bank of America overall compared to the JP Morgan, some of the other financials. I think there's a lot of buying that could really step in if it starts getting above technical resistance and the Fed plays a game with it.
Liz, financials have been one of the best spaces year to date, up double-digit percentage points.
Yeah.
Continue or no?
Well, I think a lot of that was driven by some of the rate moves or the expectation of cuts that we would sort of erase the risks that we knew, which was the regional bank stuff. Commercial real estate never really blew up as everybody was expecting. But at this point, because I am in the camp of we are in that late cycle sort of euphoric phase, I would worry more about valuations being stretched and a lot of capital markets activity on stretched valuations. So I'm not a big bull on the banks right now.
All right, up next, Mike Santoli with his midday word. Senior markets commentator Mike Santoli, he joins us now with his midday word. What's on your mind?
You know, Scott, the market continues to just color within the lines. For as much as it's been, you know, a lot of hoopla around massive gains quarter end, a wobbly start to the second quarter. Overbought. We've basically been going sideways for 2 weeks. I was talking yesterday, we spent almost all day exactly where the market closed 2 weeks earlier on Fed Day. So we're testing the whole premise of how we got here, but it's just hard to find the market itself violating any rules along the way. Really low dispersion within the market, really high dispersion, low volatility. It's all to the good. I still think it's a tough starting place for further gains, but market doesn't cooperate with that view.
Well, now we got to see the jobs report, decide whether good news is good news is bad news, who knows
what. And if the Treasury market can stay placid throughout it.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be the tell as to whether we think good news is actually good news or bad news or this, that, and the other news. Mike, thanks. Exactly. I'll see you on Closing Bell. Mike Santoli, Final Trades are next. I hope to see you on Closing Bell, 3 o'clock Eastern time. We take you through the final stretch with John Mowry. He's been really bullish this market, as you know. We'll find out if he still is. Marcy McGregor, Stephanie Link, Roger Altman, and Kevin Simpson's got some new trades to tell you about, too, and he will do that at 3 o'clock. I will see you then. Let's do final trades. Liz Young, you're first.
Gold miners today. We know the commodity is up a lot. I think it's up because of global currency volatility and the expectation of more. It stays up, but miners have not kept up. I think they can continue catching up, still 30% below their highs of 2020.
Okay, good stuff. Bill Baruch?
I want Liz's trade and mine, Meta. It's breaking out here as we're talking.
Yeah, that's your new buy this morning. Just to remind people, it's up 4% today. Nice session there. Carrie Firestone.
Booking Holdings, consumers are spending and they're traveling, and that's a growth industry.
All right, the JB.
Patty, give me that chart. What I'm showing you here is a confirmed breakout in shares of Charles Schwab. I do not own this stock. I may eventually buy it. I like to front run myself a little bit and make sure you can.
For us.
Anyway, technically, I love the way this looks, and I think she's going higher.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you on the Bell Exchanges now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Picture this. It's Saturday morning and you're on your John Deere compact tractor. You're effortlessly breaking ground on your new landscaping project. Next, you're moving piles of rocks just by moving a lever. And now, you're enjoying the warmth of the sun as you clear brush across your pasture. We could keep trying to put you in the moment, but to really understand everything you can do with a John Deere compact tractor, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.